Hello, Capital Region. This is the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC LP 105.3 FM in Troy and WOOS 98.9 FM in Schenectady, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York. I'm Guy Schaefer. Today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, Lexis Figueroa from All of Us speaks with HMM's Elizabeth Press about his activism. They discuss white supremacy, police bias, and his arrest at the New York State Capitol on January 6th. After that, Adrian Hill provides a brief overview of the United Tenants of Albany, including what services they provide and how you can get involved. Then Congressman Paul Tonko recounts the volatile events at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th in conversation with Andrea Cunliffe. After that, Erica Diggs speaks with Brennan Herlihy, a singer and actor from Erie, Pennsylvania. And then to close out the show, Rensselaer County Working Families Party leader Phil Markham talks to Corinne Carey about the Republican Party's effort to switch their voters to the Working Families Party and what he suggests progressive voters in the county should do in response. But first, here are the headlines. The Albany City School District says it will send students home with academic materials in case civil unrest related to next week's presidential inauguration triggers the sudden need for distance learning. Albany County reported 18 new COVID hospitalizations overnight, and there are 158 county residents currently hospitalized from the virus, a net increase of 7. The county also reported 3 additional deaths from COVID. President-elect Joe Biden has agreed to increase the federal government's reimbursement of states and local governments for COVID-19-related costs, a change that will result in roughly another $2 billion for New York. Biden announced a new $2 trillion coronavirus relief package Thursday night, proposing $350 billion in direct aid to state and local governments, along with another round of stimulus checks, enhanced unemployment insurance, increasing the minimum wage, and more money for vaccine distribution, testing, and schools. The Times Union reports that Governor Cuomo has selected the Port of Albany as the site of the nation's first facility for manufacturing giant wind turbine towers. Part of a plan to build a series of turbine farms off the Long Island coast, the factory will employ an estimated 300 people once completed. Governor Cuomo also announced that he wants to invest $300 billion in investment projects across the state, especially for downstate transportation needs. The Gazette reports that the city of Schenectady will outline plans for $1.1 million in spending to make 8 downtown area intersections more pedestrian-friendly during a virtual meeting Tuesday evening, January 19th. Planned work includes safety measures at the intersections like pedestrian signal improvements, building ADA-compliant sidewalk ramps, installing pedestrian warning signs, and creating high-visibility crosswalks. And Rensselaer County will team up with Hudson Valley Community College, HVCC, to establish a point of distribution for COVID-19 vaccinations. The state's rollout of the vaccine continues to be plagued with problems, with most eligible residents unable to schedule appointments. For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine coming to you from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York. Our mission is to use art and participatory action to promote social and environmental justice and freedom of creative expression. This program is produced by community members and funded in part by monthly donations from Sanctuary sustainers. To learn how you can contribute, go to mediasanctuary.org, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org, that's hmm@mediasanctuary.org, or call 518-272-2390. Up first, Lexis Figueroa from All of Us speaks with Hudson Mohawk Magazine's Elizabeth Press about his activism. They discuss white supremacy, police bias, and his arrest at the New York State Capitol on January 6th.
Next, I'm joined by Lexis Figueroa, a Saratoga organizer with All of Us. We are recording this interview just hours after the House impeached Trump for the second time, this time on incitement of insurrection. First of all, Lexis, thank you for joining us today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. And second, I was wondering if you had a reaction to this news.
Thank you. Yeah, my reaction is, obviously, I'm pleased to see that. He's done nothing but cause a lot of division in our communities, and he's been bad news for the country. You see what's going on right now. See what happened last Wednesday at the Capitol, the insurrection. That was, it's crazy. He's got to be stopped.
And speaking of January 6, 2021, this was a day where white nationalists created an insurrection in Washington, D.C. at the Capitol. Here in Albany, there was a rally in support of Donald Trump as well, and a counter protest. And you were there. Talk about what that scene was like last Wednesday here in Albany.
It was a little more wild than usual. There was about 35, 40 of them. A few of my friends ended up going there to check out the rally. We were countering the protest, meaning we were just going there to voice our opinions, how we don't believe in what they're saying, in the lies and the rhetoric that they're spreading with the false of the voting in the elections. I got there when there was a commotion going on, actually. The commotion was going on. I actually hear a taser going off. I run over there out of my car. I leave my car running, make sure my friends are good. What I end up seeing is one of my friends being tased by one of the Proud Boys in his neck. He already had been punched. I also seen one of my friends get kicked in the face a few times by a few different people. So it's a lot of chaos, a lot of screaming, yelling. Everybody's panicking. State troopers come running out, bursting out the building 2.5 minutes after, as seen on the video that was posted by the state troopers. They actually admitted to having undercovers there the whole time. It really bewilders me why they decided to wait 2.5 minutes to intervene when we seen them seeing the escalation going on. Like I said, I seen that from my car. So if I could see it from my car, they could definitely seen it. So it wasn't until one of my friends retaliated from trying to defend himself and a few of my friends. Once again, there was 35 of them, 40 of them, and maybe six of us, five of us. So outnumbered, definitely. Yeah, the cops opted in as soon as the Proud Boys started getting hurt. More bias.
And we've seen a lot of talk and a lot of analysis around how last Wednesday was handled in Washington, D.C. and also here in Albany in terms of how these white nationalists were treated versus how Black and brown people are treated at BLM protests that have been happening since George Floyd was murdered. You've been out on the streets, you're a well-known activist. What's your take, the difference in how you're treated?
The difference is crazy to be seen. And it's not just here locally, it's other places. Like you said, I've really been on the ground. I've seen how they operate in D.C. I see MPD come to us and corner us in the BLM Plaza and have us surrounded on all four sides. If we left BLM Plaza, we were stuck to leave. They also made us leave in the direction where all the Proud Boys were. That day, there was about 3,000 Proud Boys and 300, 400 BLM protesters. So, yeah, man, just the aggression towards us is crazy. We've been tear gassed, hit with rubber bullets, pepper bullets, arrested, unlawfully arrested, beat down, hit with batons, everything else. We've been through the fire, and I just sit back and watch them allowed to do whatever they want to, especially the Proud Boys and any of the MAGA people. I mean, the cops are with them, so they're going to protect them.
And now this is a radio interview, so our audience cannot see your face, but you are bandaged. And I believe this happened on January 6th at the New York State Capitol. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what happened to you personally that day.
What happened that day was, like I said, I ended up not being there during the whole violence. I was there, but I wasn't a participant in the violence at all.
When you say violence, you're talking about what the Times Union reported about the, quote, double stabbing that took place outside of the state capitol.
Yes, I am. If you read the Times Union story and even News 13 story, when they put my name on there, it would seem to anybody that I was involved as well in there, and I was arrested due to that. Not at all. What ended up happening was I attempted to go to my vehicle, like I said, with left running. There was about 20 MAGA people standing by my car. I grew worried once I thought about the fact that I left my car on. It's a brand new car with a lot of valuables in there. And I went to go to try to rush to go to my car. The cops didn't like where I was going to because they had the whole Capitol locked down right there. And I ended up getting tackled to the ground by seven state troopers. And yeah, my face got scraped up, bruised up. Today I went to Ortho New York. I have a cast on my hand. So I have a sprained wrist and a sprained thumb as well. That was all a result of this arrest. I also was charged with
5 charges. Yeah, it's crazy. The other thing about it is we have been fighting for, and I've been fighting personally for, getting rid of and abolishment of knee holds, choke holds, hog ties, and any of those kinds of things. The reason why George Floyd ended up murdered because of these knee holds. And somehow I find myself under a cop's knee, both of his knees on my neck. And I'm screaming, I can't breathe due to my asthma. This isn't my first time dealing with police brutality or overuse of force. I've been dealing with this since I was 11 years old. The first time I was ever arrested due to a pins case.
Having seen what happened with a knee hold in Schenectady, having seen what happened with George Floyd, in that moment, what must go through your head is the worst.
In that moment, the only thing I'm thinking is, you know, like I'm praying for them to get off me. And I'm hoping that if they don't get off me in time, I'm going to die. And that's just the honest truth. No exaggeration to that or dramatics to that. That's honest. When I'm sitting there and I'm almost having a panic attack, I have anxiety and people are on top of me and on top of your chest and on top of your neck and your head. And they're telling you not to move and you're not moving because you can't breathe barely anyway. It's hard. It brings back traumatic things from my childhood due to this pettiness that shouldn't even have happened. It's crazy. How things could change so fast. We've seen that with people like Sandra Bland. Things changed from just getting pulled over from not using a signal. I returned to her being found dead in a cell. It's scary.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Lexis. And I'm sorry that this happened to you. On Wednesday, January 13th, all of us was to hold a rally responding to white supremacy and police brutality, but instead it turned into a press conference. Can you tell me what happened at the New York State Capitol?
What happened with that is, as if anybody can notice that lives in the area, they are locking down the Capitol more right now due to the threats from these same white supremacist groups that were out there on the 6th, the Proud Boys and the Boogaloo Boys and Oath Keepers and 3%ers and everybody else. They decided, apparently we have got word, the state troopers were on a high alert saying that they had a dangerous threat level of violence coming from all of us, which is my group. We decided for the people's safety, even though we really didn't want to do it, not going to lie, I wanted to be in the streets and to fight for what we were fighting for, which is for my justice. And we're seeking also to shed light on what really happened. Like we said, too many people didn't really know what happened at all. When I was there today, a lot of the media said they had no idea what even happened. So we were able to do that. But it's definitely disheartening to know that we couldn't even protest in peace without worrying about being called a threat of some sort. Just think about this. Think that when we're not even considered a violent threat level, we already shot with pepper bullets and tear gas and rubber bullets and unlawful arrests. Just imagine what they could do to us when they have the go-ahead because they're saying we're a threat.
How did you become activated as an activist and join all of us?
I went to a protest. There was one, it was a big one in Saratoga. And that same evening, there was the huge one in Troy with over 11,000 people. I heard Jamaica Miles speaking there, and her words and her energy spoke to me very much so. So after that, my baby mother and girlfriend ended up reaching out to Jamaica for me. I ended up talking to her because I just had an idea of organizing an event. I wanted things to continue in Saratoga. I didn't see a lot of things going on. All of us ended up coming out there to support me. Jamaica and Sean and Michaela were the first people I met, and all of us. And it was just like family as soon as we met. And they pushed me out there to speak. Jamaica and Sean said, hey, we got you. And I've been on the bullhorn ever since. And I've always wanted to be a part of the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, sitting home and watching all the things we're watching on TV and seeing the world as it is. And watching George Floyd for the over 8 minutes. That really changed something to me. And now I'm here. And I've also been fighting for the justice for Daryl Mount. And that's an unsolved case that's never been ever investigated in Saratoga Springs in the hands of SSPD. A 21-year-old kid dead after being brain dead for months. Yeah, Daryl Mount was definitely a big part of that that gave me the boost to really fight. And I'm still fighting for his justice, for his mother, the rest of his family, and the rest of Saratoga.
So much more to talk about, Lexis Figueroa, but I just want to make sure I give you the last word. Is there anything that you want to make sure that we include in this interview today on the Hudson Mohawk magazine?
Well, all we want is peace. And like we say, no justice, no peace. And that means if we don't get justice, there will be no peace, which means we are continue to hear us on our bullhorns and continue to hear us in the streets and see us. And because Black lives matter, and Black lives are going to continue to matter, and all lives don't matter until Black lives matter. Until next time, that's it.
Adrian Hill is a community organizer with the United Tenants of Albany. Welcome, Adrian.
Thank you.
That was Lexis Figueroa from All of Us in conversation with HMM's Elizabeth Press. Up next, HMM's Ian speaks with community organizer Adrian Hill, who provides a brief overview of the United Tenants of Albany, including what services they provide and how you can get involved.
Adrian Hill is a community organizer with the United Tenants of Albany. Welcome, Adrian.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
So I guess first off, tell us a bit about United Tenants and the services you're providing to local renters.
Sure. United Tenants of Albany has been around for about 40 years. We are an organization that is dedicated to not only providing very tangible services, but we offer advocacy services, information on tenants' rights. Anything that has to do with housing and folks being able to secure affordable housing that's adequate for their needs. And when there's situations that prevent that, whether they be eviction or problems with landlords or, you know, a myriad of things that folks go through, we are there to assist.
Are there any specific programs you want to talk about or think that are particularly important to what you guys do?
Our homeless prevention program is actually the program where we provide monetary assistance to people who are behind in their rent, who are looking to move into new apartments or homes and need first month's rent and security deposits. We also provide assistance for folks who are behind in their utility payments. We also offer advocacy services for people who are having difficulties with their landlords and cannot navigate those conversations. And the other piece to our homeless prevention program is our legal advocacy. And that piece is actually where we have two folks who are involved in court proceedings, evictions, foreclosures, et cetera, that are there to help folks right from the beginning of the process to the end, providing legal assistance, helping with paperwork, or any other things that are attached to that particular situation.
Mm-hmm. So how is the current health crisis affecting renters in the area, and how is your organization attempting to support them in light of the global pandemic?
Right now, there are individuals who have lost employment because of COVID, who have been furloughed, their hours have been cut. There's a $3 billion debt across the state of New York in reference to rent right now. It has affected people insurmountably. We have seen the increase in the need for our services has increased tenfold during this pandemic. So what we have been doing is, folks, we have a housing hotline, which is our initial point of contact. People call in and they state the need that they have. We have a young lady who actually divides the calls into categories. We have a category for rental assistance. We have a category for court issues, and we have a category for legal issues. After that happens, the individuals are directed to one of our housing case managers. They are contacted by phone, an intake is done, and the process begins.
Wow, yeah, that it definitely sounds like, I didn't know that $3 billion number, so that's definitely, that's staggering.
We have an eviction moratorium right now,
mm-hmm.
going to offer relief for people who are housing insecure and who are possibly facing eviction, but the debt is going to continue to increase. We have not seen a lot of assistance from the federal level, which is actually what we are looking forward to being in place sometime in the near future, so that we can actually, again, assist people in that debt that they're incurring. The situation is drastic, and crisis is not even a sufficient word to describe the situation. We have families, individuals, people with disabilities. Everyone who rents is being affected by this crisis in one manner or another.
What do you feel are the best ways within our people within our community can support and get involved with the work that United Tenants of Albany is doing?
Oh, there's a couple of different ways. The department that I am in charge of orchestrating is the Community Development Department, and we have opportunities for folks to come alongside us and learn about the different policies and procedures that are being voted on the local and the state level. And they can learn about political education and begin to, you know, sign petitions and even share their stories about the things that they have gone through in reference to housing. These are things that we are able to convey to our electeds to get the point across and to express what people really need. The other thing that folks can do is we are always looking for volunteers who have time and who want to help further the social justice cause that we're involved in. We also have a Housing for All Committee, which is a committee comprised of service providers, landlords, tenants, and electeds, folks in the community who want to be in the arena, if you will, as housing policy is made on the local level. We have a lot of interaction with the Common Council and the Mayor's Office of City Hall. And, you know, we try to come together to make the best policies, procedures, programming, all of that for folks across the board in the community in reference to housing. The other part where folks can help is we are always looking for folks who are generous, who have the wherewithal and the resources to donate to our funds, where we then help folks with the different things that they have need of in reference to housing.
All right. Well, we are close to out of time, but finally, I just want to ask, do you have any specific advice for tenants facing eviction currently, or not eviction because of the moratorium, but who will possibly be facing eviction because of their debts after the moratorium expires? And what kind of actions would you advise that they take to assert their rights?
Right now, I encourage anyone who is possibly facing eviction potentially down the road. There is the new eviction moratorium has some different parts to it. There is a disclaimer that folks can fill out to send to their landlords, who then send it to the court, which actually puts them in a position where if they are facing eviction or if there's paperwork that has already been filed, that will stop it immediately.
That was HMM's Ian speaking with Adrian Hill of United Tenants of Albany. For those of y'all just tuning in, I'm Guy Schaefer, and you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network. This program covers stories of social and environmental justice produced by the community for the community and is supported by independent donations. Thank you to all of our volunteers and sanctuary sustainers. You can hear all of the stories on today's program at mediasanctuary.org. Congressman Paul Tonko speaks with HMM's Andrea Cunliffe to recount the volatile events at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. He describes a threat faced by Congress in the Capitol and talks about the way forward.
January 6th has been pretty earth-shattering for all of us. Talking with us today is House of Representatives Congressman Paul D. Tonko of the 20th District in New York.
How many of you were there?
For us there, it was the 24 or so of us going down the stairways and then joining several others as who were just mass moving through the hallway to, find our way to some safety.
Did you find people were panicking?
Some were, yeah, you could tell some were panicking with the event. You know, running through the hallway, through the tunnel, there obviously were people who were, short of breath and, just hanging over the wall, trying to just regain composure and, and trying to just move without any really sense of what was happening, even though you could begin to comprehend it. It was happening so quickly, you didn't have time to think through. You just wanted to move forward and listen to the directions of the police, which were happening and readjusting as we went along, because of their communicating to one another, all while many of them were being, challenged severely with a huge crowd and overwhelmed certainly with many, many more people than they could handle.
Do you feel that they were unprepared for this, or?
I believe so. I don't think this was unprecedented, granted, but there should have been an exchange of information that organizers, the president organized this rally that was conducted that late that morning before the procedure started. Mm-hmm. Incited them. He told them, this is not for the faint of heart. We have to go up there and really be strong and make the change. And I'm going to be up there marching with you on this Capitol, and we're going to take that mm-hmm. back. All based on fraudulent, a message of fraud, which they knew time and time again was rejected by the court 60 times over. There were moments where many situations where the legal team for the president didn't even defend their case because they knew there was no defense for what they were saying. In this given 2020 election, this past 2020 election, the results were scrutinized. The process was very, very much overviewed with every bit of concern for free and fair as an outcome. And so it's been proven, because of the 2016 experience and the many, many proclamations of fraud, every effort was made to make certain that this was fair, that voters were not suppressed, that everyone had an opportunity to vote in a fair and free election, which obviously was then proven. But the messaging on this was so far from accurate. The fact that you could incite people and believe that your election was stolen, It was a sad note that was delivered here onto our republic, onto our democracy. A deep, deep, profound bit of sadness, especially as you think back now and see some of the renderings, the tapes of what was going on, all while you were sitting there, just vaguely understanding what was happening. It was an emotional, continues to be an emotional situation, as more and more film is being shared, more and more accounting of the situation, more and more info that comes our way. The determination to, do anything to prove your point. And some of the treatment of the police officers, within the leadership of this nation, an individual that resorted to kind of a violent message and, a response that was, just out of the ordinary, not utilizing the various procedures or processes that can air your concerns, but rather just an outright exploitation of anger and violence. And it's tragic that you can have a huge crowd encouraged by someone who should, know very well that there are these transitions and that they happen, should happen in an orderly fashion.
Congressman Tonko, is there something about incitement to riot? Isn't that what we're looking at?
Yeah, I think, as we move with the orders of impeachment, the articles of impeachment, the concern is just that putting the Constitution and our symbol of freedom, our capital, our dome under risk, at great risk, is what this is about. The Republic is challenged here. The outburst was encouraged.
Government has requested the president to resign, and documents have been signed and brought to Vice President Pence, who refused to agree to that. So we've now moved on to, in fact, it's happening right now, I believe, the articles of impeachment are being voted on. What happens? What can we expect?
Well, there were three opportunities. There was resignation. There was the invoking of the 25th Amendment, right, where the cabinet determines to displace the president with Vice President Pence assuming office, or the impeachment. And it appears that the only avenue that will remain open is the impeachment, where already there's bipartisan show of support. The third ranking member of the House, Representative Cheney, has made a very bold statement about, the actions of the president, and they are used as a rationale, those actions, for the impeachment. There are many colleagues who joined. There were colleagues who joined in this participation, allegedly. So I think there's a call here for investigation to see just what role my colleagues played in this insurrection, in the sedition. There's a lot of information gathering that needs to be done. If we don't learn from this wicked experience, we will have let down our republic, and our democracy will be tarnished for it.
So what happens next? What do you see as a solution to mending this horrible division?
Well, I think, we have to understand that unity, healing, coming together, moving forward with optimism and peace is based on truth. And so the search for truth here, not manufactured concepts, but truth. As that verification comes, then I think we need to submit to the truth and go forward and begin that process of healing as a nation, taking on the many, many issues that are so urgent in nature, from the COVID pandemic, where just today, I think over 4,000 people have succumbed to the virus. There's no time to waste here, but there's every need to dig thoroughly, deeply, and perhaps painfully into the search for truth, and then act based upon that truth.
You have initiated the articles of impeachment. You also approved of the counting of the votes.
And several and where times do you over. Go... Yeah, yeah. I mean, in many cases.
So what more needs to be done? What more do you need to do? What more do we, the public, need to do? How can we move this forward and start to heal?
You've got many groups that are searching into all sorts of investigatory processes, including the FBI and certainly the Capitol Police. I mean, I know the FBI has made several arrests already. That will delve, I think, many organizations into deeper study as to what was happening here. There's nothing stopping the Congress, both houses, from conducting hearings and oversight and investigations so that we can respond to the demands that we all bear by taking an oath of office, pledging our allegiance to the Republic, to the Constitution, and we all as citizens owe it to our great Republic to make certain that we search for the truth.
There's so many divisions right now where people don't trust one another. And not only in the Congress, not only between the Republicans and the Democrats, but between the public and our representatives. How can we nurture that into something more positive and less destructive?
Well, again, I think data and information will lead us to the truth we all require. And we have to hope that people will submit to that truth. And I think it can be done with a tone of unity that is constantly shared by leadership to this nation, which is hurting right now. I can tell you many, many constituents have said to me they watched in horror. They wept. They were totally destroyed by what they were watching. We have a system that, even with its imperfections, is a system that allows us opportunity, and we should take those opportunities and work them to the max so that we build upon the framework and move yet closer to perfection, as we were challenged by our founders as a people in search of a perfect union.
That was Andrea Cunliffe speaking with Congressman Paul Tonko. Up next, Brennan Herlihy is a young singer and actor from Erie, Pennsylvania, who has been performing since grade school. HMM correspondent Erica Diggs has got the scoop for you.
This is HMM correspondent Erica Dulcinea Diggs for the Hudson Mohawk Radio, and today I'm speaking with Brendan Herlihy. How are you doing today?
I am doing absolutely fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm well, and he is here to perform for the arts in Orlando, Florida at the Marriott World Center Hotel, right?
Yes, I am.
First, what city are you from, and where did you audition at?
I am from Erie, Pennsylvania, a little lake town up in northwest sector of Pennsylvania, and fortunately the arts came right to me.
Okay. Yeah. How did you get knowledge of the arts?
Well, it's a funny story. So my friend told me about a week before I auditioned that there was this talent scout coming, and I completely forgot that she told me about it.
Oh,
and
dear.
All of a sudden I'm scrolling through on the very last day that you're able to sign up, and
oh my gosh.
I just stumble across this webpage with a big sign that says audition today. And I was like, so I filled out my things and I went to the audition.
And why are you here? What did you perform?
So I changed my song 4 times before I went up. I decided in the last 20 seconds before audition that I was going to sing Memory from Cats.
Oh my.
Of which I did. And I also performed a Pepsi commercial for her.
And how did that go? What did she say? She loved you?
She sure did. I didn't think anyone expected me to be as strong vocally as I was that day, because I was kind of quiet in the corner by myself, and then I went up there and sang this big old ballad, so it was pretty intense.
Who scouted you?
Robin Minette.
Oh, wow. She must be a lovely lady.
She's wonderful. She's absolutely fantastic. I'll never forget, in our callback, she came up to me after the conference. I was asking her a bunch of questions. And she looked me in right in my eyes and she said, you have enormous potential. She said, you have exactly what it takes. She gave me a big old hug and I just was like, dead.
Very personable.
I was like, oh, thank you. Like crying.
Yes, you love to hear those kind of stories. Why do you enjoy singing and acting? What propelled you to start doing this?
So I've been doing this since I was a kid.
Mm.
It was something,
what,
you know,
age?
Oh girl, birth. Like, since, you know, but I started actually entertaining when I got into 6th grade. My very first show, I did Seussical the Musical, played the Cat in the Hat. Very, very fun.
Okay.
You know, it was an escape for me. Growing up in a small town as a young homosexual, there's not many outlets for me in which I feel completely accepted. But this industry, this passion of mine, being surrounded by like-minded people all day, is just... you can't compare it to anything else. It's truly one-of-a-kind experience, and it's been part of my heart for a very long time.
That's beautiful. So, now, you said you are, I don't mean to, you know, pry, but, you know, you said you being a homosexual man.
Yeah.
What is it like you going through life as that, and then you trying to get through certain doors? Do people look at you a little differently sometimes?
Sometimes, yeah. I fortunately have not had any horror stories have been like super, super terrible to the point where I've like feared for my life. I know a lot of people do go through those situations.
Yeah.
I fortunately have not had any of those. I do run across a lot of close-minded people all the time. Anywhere I go, there's going to be people who don't understand it. It's not for them. It's not what they do.
Right.
That's fine. You know, if you don't understand it, fine. Just don't, you don't have to openly tell me, "Wah, I don't like what you do."
Right.
Thanks. On to the next one.
Right.
As far as opening doors, I've never experienced any issues due to the fact that I'm homosexual. That doors won't open for me. For the most part, I feel growing up, small town, close-minded people, has made me incredibly adaptable, which has ended up opening a lot more doors for me than would have if I didn't go through that experience.
No, I definitely agree with you. What are some of your goals for this week? What did you want to accomplish, or what didn't you get to accomplish, and, you know, how are you going to do that?
So this week for me was still a mystery before I even got here. I was still running through my mind, like, what is this still even about? Like, it was still very unreal to me that this was happening in the capacity that it was.
So blurry.
It's been a dream. I mean, honestly, I arrived here and I saw this hotel that's like five hotels combined. And I was like, I'm gonna get lost.
Yes.
Which I did. Honestly, my end goal was really to just put my name out there. I was by no means expecting to immediately sign with an agency, get work, become incredibly successful. That's not how it happens. Does that happen for some people? Yes, but that is very rare. And just not the path that is going to fall into place for me. As far as the path that is going for me, I did get my name out to a few different agencies, a few different people who seemed to enjoy what they saw. Hopefully, with the contact and things that I provide them when I go home, now's crunch time. This is the time to work harder than I ever have. Get out there, do more projects than I ever have, self-tape more than I ever have, take more pictures than I ever have, get them all to everybody else, see what's good, see what's cute, and build myself a career.
I know that's right. Listen, I know you're gonna do it.
I hope.
That's the What have you learned about yourself here at the arts? What are you, like you said, you're gonna change, you're gonna start making new demo reels, you're gonna start putting yourself out there more, but what have you learned about yourself within yourself through the arts?
I have learned that I am a lot more resilient than I originally had thought. You know, I've always viewed myself as a pretty resilient person. I always viewed myself as someone who can handle a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When I came in here, I thought of myself as a singer.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that's what I do. I am a singer.
Mm-hmm.
I act on the side, but singing is my gig.
Mm-hmm.
When I went in and I did my audition and it did not go the way I had anticipated, immediately walked out of that room and I was like, that did not go well. I said, that was not the best I can put out. That's not what they wanted to see. And it's just not an accurate representation of my talent. So I said, okay, what now? Now I have to crunch time my acting, which I have confidence in, but wasn't what I had initially thought I would be recognized for first. You know, and through not getting to round two was of course heartbreaking, because I wanted to show more people what I could do. But I had to very quickly take that and turn it into a drive, a fire, a passion to absolutely nail my other two events and make people see the talent that they did not see in the singing rounds.
Were you able to do that?
I believe so. From what I heard, I did do that.
Okay, and how do you keep the faith? Since you've been doing this for so long, since you came out of Mama. So
yes.
So what keeps you going to keep acting? Because, you know, it's a million no's in this industry.
For sure.
So what keeps your drive? What makes you,
Absolutely. Honestly, what keeps me going in this industry is purely my love for the industry. I would not be able to handle even the small amount of rejections that I've gotten at home from haven't even worked in the professional industry yet, going from the rejections I get at home, going to here not doing as well as I wanted, moving into the professional world, hopefully. my love for the industry keeps me going through it. At the end of the day, even if I do it alone by myself in my room for nobody, it's still fulfilling. It's still what I love to do. I'm going to keep doing it. Yes. And the minute I get to do that for somebody else and they can recognize that I love what I'm doing and they want to produce that, that's amazing.
Okay. Do you have any tips for people who are looking to get into acting, singing, dancing even? Like, what would you say?
Absolutely. My biggest tips are definitely look at local theaters. I started out in my middle school. Some people don't have a school program. Unfortunately, a lot of art budgets do get cut.
Mm-hmm.
Look for local theaters near you. Even if it's like 45 minutes to an hour away, how much do you really want to do this? Because if you really want to do this, it's worth a drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth a trip. Training. Get yourself to a dance class. I didn't, and I can tell you that I wish I would have. Mm-hmm. I still could, but...
Never too late.
Never too late. I still may. Get yourself to a dance class. Get yourself a vocal coach. You know, a lot of vocal coaches are incredibly expensive. Find one that maybe is not. There's a lot of different vocal coaches for a lot of different needs.
Mm-hmm.
Find what suits you. Take an acting class. Even if it's watching shows, going to see the theater, imagining yourself doing what they do, do that. And do it by yourself in your room at first and see if you like it. See if it's comfortable.
That was HMM's Erica Diggs speaking with singer and actor Brendan Hurley. And to close out the show, the Albany Times Union reported on January 12th that Rensselaer County Republicans are asking supporters to switch their voter registration to the Working Families Party, quote, in an effort to help the reelection efforts of Rensselaer County Executive Steve McLaughlin in his November 2021 bid for reelection. Rensselaer County Working Families Party leader Phil Markham talked with HMM correspondent Corinne Carey about this effort and what he suggests progressive voters in the county could do in response.
Phil, thank you so much for taking a moment to talk to me.
Thank you for inviting me.
Can you tell me what your affiliation with the Working Families Party is?
I'm a state committee member, Rensselaer County leader, and campaign coordinator.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Working Families Party?
The Working Families Party is a minor party. I don't like to call it a third party because we have an unlimited number of political parties in New York State. We are one of four parties that has automatic ballot status right now. And New York State has a gift called Electoral Fusion. Electoral Fusion allows candidates to run under more than one party line. So that if a candidate meets our ideology, if we approve of that candidate, we can put them on the line regardless of any other party affiliation. We are a completely independent party.
What does the Working Families Party stand for? In other words, what kind of candidates would earn their place on the WFP line?
We are a progressive party, party of social justice. So the progressive part is very much economic. It means that we want to have the people controlling our government, that we oppose corporate finance of elections, we oppose big money donations to campaigns. And the social justice is exactly that we want to see racial equity, and we stand behind matters of social justice. We want good schools, good jobs, and good government for all of the people.
The Albany Times Union reported on January 12th that Rensselaer County Republicans are persuading party supporters to register as Working Families Party members. The Albany Times Union was very explicit in saying that what they want to do is offset Democratic strength in November when County Executive Steve McLaughlin runs for re-election. What's your reaction to this?
Yes, that's absolutely no surprise at all that the Republicans, and especially under Steve McLaughlin and his paid operative, Richard Crist, have been using the Working Families Party through a process called Opportunity to Ballot. But basically what they do is they sign up people of their own. Many are county employees or families of their own candidates. Steve McLaughlin does not share any of our ideology, but they are using this to try to take over our line, and they do this by petitioning to get a candidate put on the ballot So that takes about 5,000 people who are registered in any party for the district that they're running for, which is only a handful. For instance, we have roughly 1,000 Working Families Party registrants in Rensselaer County currently. They need to get 50 signatures to get a county executive position put on the ballot. The first step is to petition to get a candidate on the ballot, which forces a primary election. And then they use the same people, largely with absentee ballots, but they use them to vote in the nominating primary of the party. And they can win by one or two votes, and they have in the past. That's really important because those one or two votes can easily convert to 1,000 votes, which is more than the margin of victory in the general election. Or right now, the bottom line is that the people who can control three of the four existing parties or the two minor party lines will win the election. So it all comes down to petitioning and then to the primary.
This isn't the first time we've seen this. Rodney Wiltshire ran on the Green and Independence party lines, two parties that are, you know, pretty far apart ideologically. And he actually did well in his run against incumbent Troy Mayor Patrick Madden. So it isn't unprecedented that this kind of thing might happen.
No, it isn't. What's a little unusual this year is that, you may know, the minor party lines that couldn't get enough votes on the presidential ballot the last go-around, but lost their automatic ballot status. In other words, those parties were completely disempowered. They can still exist, but they will not appear on the ballot. So they have very little value. It's pretty hard to get somebody on the ballot unless they have the automatic ballot status. Both the Independence Party and the Green Party that you mentioned, along with the SAM Party and the Libertarian Party, some other minor parties that were really fairly insignificant, but the Green Party and the Independence Party lost their automatic ballot position, which means basically that the people who are registered to those parties have little or no value at this point. What they are most likely targeting is people who are in the Independence Party as well as the Green Party to register as Working Families Party, because they have to be party registrants in order to participate in the, I'm going to call it, stealing of the line. Stealing is exactly what it is, because what they are trying to do is they are trying to take a nomination without permission from the party committee.
I actually interviewed Rodney Wiltshire about this when he was running, and he said, look, you know, if people register as Green Party members and they decide to nominate me, then that's a fair process. We are playing by the rules. What say you?
I say that might be fine if the ideology of the Green Party people, the people registered with the Green Party, matched that with Rodney. In our case with Rodney, the last round, he no longer matched our ideology. We did not endorse him, but he did run on the other lines, and of course he couldn't win without a major party line or on those lines alone. So that's quite a bit different than somebody who has a completely opposite ideology, and especially if they are being put up with no ideology at all, but they are merely county employees or friends and family of candidates who don't share our ideology. Our party has a platform. We have an ideology.
So what can be done? Can the Working Families Party kick people out of its ranks? What else can be done?
Encouraging more progressive voters to vote in the primaries, and right now to get the people who would share the values of the Working Families Party, the progressive values, people who would consider themselves to be progressive, to move their registration to the Working Families Party. And that doesn't matter whether they are Democrats or Republicans, because it is going to come down to one or two votes in the Working Families Party primary is what's going to win the general election. In other words, if Steve McLaughlin is able to secure the Conservative Party line, which is the complete opposite of the Working Families Party line, if he can secure that, the Republican Party line and the Working Families Party line, that's enough votes to override any Democratic Party line. In order to win elections, we need progressives voting in the Working Families primary. And there's really only one reason for most people to be registered with a party, and that is the all-important ability to vote in the primary of that party.
Phil, the Albany Times Union was explicit. The Rensselaer County Republicans were explicit in their intention to register Republicans as Working Families Party members to help County Executive Steve McLaughlin. So I'll ask you to be explicit. For those registered Democrats who may take issue with Rensselaer County Executive Steve McLaughlin, what would you advise them to do?
Oh, I would absolutely advise them to register with the Working Families Party, because that is really what's going to determine the outcome of the general election. This is what's going to help the Democratic Party candidate to win, assuming that we have cross-endorsed the Democratic Party candidate, which we most likely will. I can't speak completely to that. The process isn't complete.
Where can folks learn more about the Working Families Party so that they can make a decision for themselves?
The Working Families Party has a website. We have a Rensselaer County Facebook page that I monitor constantly. They can ask questions there. And I'm always willing to talk to anybody about the values of the Working Families Party and why primaries and party registration is sometimes extremely important, or why it's not very important at all. Here we have a case where one vote in a primary can determine the entire outcome of a general election. When we look at something like the presidential race, a vote in the Democratic primary has very little value. It's like spitting in the ocean. It's one in something like a million that somebody could be favoring and have influence to get Bernie Sanders, say, over Joe Biden nominated for New York. It's probably not going to happen, but all politics are local. And when we look at some of these local positions, and especially county executives, this very well could be where the next governor of New York is coming from.
Phil, thank you so much for joining me to talk about this.
Oh, thank you for paying attention to this important matter of especially primary elections, because all politics are local, and this is really where it's done. We need people registered right now with the Working Families Party to overcome some of these shenanigans.
That was HMM's Corinne Carey speaking with Working Families Party leader Phil Markham. The deadline for changing one's party affiliation is February 14th, 2021. That's February 14th, 2021, in order to 2021, in order to vote the primary election to determine which candidates will run on each party line. More information about how to change one's party affiliation can be found on the New York State Board of Elections website at www.elections.ny.gov/voting-register.html. Again, that's www.elections.ny.gov/voting-register.html. Go register now. And that concludes our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Guy Schaefer, and our engineer is Alexis Goldsmith. Tune in every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to hear local news. You can find all of these stories on today's program at mediasanctuary.org and on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WOC105.3FM. This program is produced entirely by volunteers. To learn how you can contribute to local stories of social and environmental justice, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org or call at 518-272-2390. That's 518-272-2390. And if you value independent media, consider a gift of a monthly donation as a sanctuary sustainer by going to mediasanctuary.org. Until next time, folks, thanks for tuning in.